Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 18th of May, 2020, Lockdown Nation. And we got an action-packed program for you today. Thank you for tuning in, telling a friend, downloading all that good stuff, rating and reviewing on iTunes and all that fun stuff. It is, what are you going to do? Go out and party someplace? No. Nope. McDay was yesterday. I did have corned beef and cabbage with the family. The kids, not a big fan of the cabbage, but they did eat the corned beef, which is good. Damn, it was good, though. Damn. Not that you really, there's no like secret corn. Maybe there is a secret corned beef recipe, but it's so secret that I don't know anything about it. It's just put all the stuff in the bin and, well, put it in waves at different times and let it boil. But, it's good. Anyway, the drawing this week, by the way, I'm just going to hold off. I have all the names of the people who've entered for the signed copies of the books, but it's just going to have to wait because I can't get into the office, and the office is where I left the books. So just going to have to hold off. I won't forget. I'll give them away, but it's just going to have to be a while. Such is life, and that means it's going to be a while till I get more books signed unless somebody creates a 6-foot-long pen. And I can get those books signed that way. We'll continue on with the show as usual. And we'll still do Friday interviews. It'll just be via Skype. Because I don't want to get anybody sick. I don't want to get sick. I sure as hell don't want to get my family sick. And I am being a good citizen, which far too many people are not being. I don't know. I guess I was young and dumb too, but I'd like to think I was never that dumb. I probably was, but I'd like to think I wasn't that dumb. We're going to talk about dumb celebrities. We're going to talk about the latest on coronavirus. We're going to talk about the relief package that is coming. Something is going to pass Congress. What it will end up being, only the shadow knows. But, not every podcast will give you like a 1930s radio drama reference. So we got that going for us today. We got a bunch of audio, and we're going to try this Skype thing with Brian Darling. We're going to have a guest on today, as a matter of fact. If all goes well, we'll see. But he knows more about Capitol Hill than anybody else has ever forgotten, so I thought it was worth picking his brain to get in the inner workings of how this stuff works and what it looks like. Plus, he's got his own opinions. He's very libertarian on it. So I suspect he's going to be again it. But like I said yesterday, I don't know that sending everybody $1,000 or more is going to be particularly useful at this moment in time. But if I get one in the mail, I'm going to cash it. I think everybody's going to cash it. So good thing is that banking is so now electronically that you don't even really need to go to the bank. If this had been 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't even know when the apps for banks and depositing checks that way began, direct deposit really took off. But whenever the hell that was, when that happened, if we didn't have that now, think of how screwed we would be. Everybody'd have to run to the bank every other Friday or every Friday or whatever your pay period is. Everybody'd wait in line. Everybody would be using the ATM. It's a freaking nightmare. So there have been some good news to come out of the last few years of human development. So thank God for technology. It does make life a little bit better. It does. It also makes life really annoying. But hey, without social media, we'd just be sitting around bitching at each other in person. Now we can do it on our own. Amy, whose email I read yesterday and did like the first half an hour of the show on yesterday, wrote back in and said, thanks for taking the time to answer that. I'm sure what was on the minds of others as well. If you would be so kind as to remember to let the podcast audience know tomorrow, meaning today, that I was not among the screw it, I'll do what I want crowd. I had questions, but I was taking precautions like a good girl. And yes, I know your memory stinks, so I am not counting on it. Well, Amy, count on it. I made a note to myself, and it actually worked for once, because I've made many notes to myself, and then I get going, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I forgot what I was supposed to talk about. And then there you go, though. But Amy's good people. Amy's been listening to the show for a long time, and I don't know. I don't think anybody was sitting around going, that Amy, she's going to kill us all. But if you were, Amy is not going to kill us all. So good on Amy. As we have to do on Wednesdays, as I love to do on Wednesdays, we have our taped call. It's a new one. We got new calls with our sponsor, Ronnie McMullen. There is a good guy, great business, and I love getting the emails from you guys saying that you're doing the CBD oil or you're trying the Life Change tea and that it's working for you. That's great. I knew it would, but it is great to hear that you guys are doing that, because that helps keep this podcast afloat, and Lord knows we all need to be kept afloat at this time. So, as we do, without any further ado, the brand new Ronnie McMullen, AncientLifeOil.com call. Joining me on the phone right now is our lovely, lovely sponsor and proprietor of GetTheTea.com, Ronnie McMullen. How's it going, Ronnie?
Great. How you doing, Derek?
I couldn't be better. I couldn't be. By law, I don't think they would allow me to be better. Look, I want to talk to you. Everybody's concerned about their immune system right now, and there are certain ways, nothing is perfect, but there are certain ways to help boost your immune system, and GetTheTea.com isn't just tea. So tell us about what you've got out there to naturally help us boost our immune system.
Well, I call the immune system, I kind of put it in terms like this is our shields, like shields up. And most of us out there, because of the foods and the water and blah, 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 our shields are down. So when the cruddy virus comes up, or any cruddy virus comes around, then we are susceptible to that issue. If our shields are up, it changes the odds of getting a virus by majorly. So with this being said, if you look up the benefits of just garlic, okay, and a lot of people, they run and they go get garlic pills. And garlic is really good, but the allicin inside the garlic, that's the key point. And most of the garlic pills that you get on the shelf are running 2 or 3%. We're running 100% allicin. And here's the thing. One of our pills of Allicin Advanced is equal to 35 cloves of garlic. It's an extract, so it's very, very powerful. So if you were going to run it with vitamin C for you to really have your shields up would be, you'd have to be taking so many milligrams. I mean, way over the top. So I just kind of sit back and I'm not worried that I'm going to get anything because my shields are up. And of course, the age plays into it and a lot of other issues. But long and the short of it is if you just look up garlic, Google garlic and what it does for you. Now imagine taking 35 cloves, except you don't smell like garlic. You don't have garlic breath, so you can still have a relationship. So it's all good. And it's on the front page. It's on sale.
And it's just a good idea to keep your shields up all the time, yes. Ronnie. Go to GetTheTea.com. Look up the Allicin Advanced. It's right there on the homepage. You're having a sale now. And if you enter promo code Derek at checkout and click the apply button, you get free shipping on top of it. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ronnie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, that's the great Ronnie McMullen from AncientLifeOil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek. Okay, let's get in. Where do we start with this stupidity? Holy Frank Tanana. What, something like this brings out the best in people, and it brings out the worst of people. Where do I start? The best or the worst? I don't even know. I suppose we'll start with the worst so that we can end on the best and give some semblance of hope, you know, because you just think, if these people are in charge, what in the hell is going on? There is a controversy. It's a non-troversy. It is Chinese propaganda being perpetrated by the liberal media and liberals in the media that, you know, everybody who says China virus, Chinese virus, Wuhan virus, anything related even tangentially to the place of origin of this pandemic is somehow horribly racist. Now, in the grand scheme of things, in a national shutdown, you would think that this would not be particularly important to thinking people, but we're not dealing with thinking people. We're dealing with progressives, people who it's agenda uber alles with them. It matters not what the cost in human lives or dollars are in anything. I mean, for God's sakes, they stood on 100 million dead in the last century and said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with our system. Don't pay any attention to these people. It was implemented wrong. Our system is perfectly fine. If we were the ones who did it, everything would be better. And every time it's been tried, it just ended up being a complete disaster. The Chinese government is now actually tweeting out through their propaganda arms about how mentioning China, saying the virus originated in China or anything that gives the people the correct impression that the virus originated in China and they dropped the ball and they imprisoned the 8 doctors who were over there fighting it, trying to warn the world that something bad was coming if the world didn't act now. Instead of heeding their warning, the commies over there put them in prison and they all subsequently died of coronavirus, by the way. So, yeah, the Chinese government is responsible for this. Screw them, to hell with them. And when this is all over, I think that we should have a reckoning with China. I think that reckoning should come in the form of, you know, the debt that you hold of ours? We're not paying it. Ever. Go to hell. You know, that I think would be good. Right now is not the time for that argument. But the left is having that argument because China is trying to deflect from their responsibility. And they're trying to even lie and say that the United States government, the military, created the coronavirus and gave it to China in an attempt to do what? They don't know. They don't follow up. And liberals don't follow up because they don't need to follow up. It's anti-USA, and the president of the USA right now is Donald Trump. So that's good enough. They just wash their hands of it. Probably not literally washing their hands. They just slap their hands together and move on. Well, we have, we'll start with Karine, I don't know how you pronounce her first name, Karine Jean-Pierre, the executive director of MoveOn.org, who is also an MSNBC contributor, a hardcore liberal activist group. Of course, their head of it or director or whatever the hell she is has a contract with MSNBC as well, because why not? And she is very concerned, not about the potential loss of life in the United States, not to the potential death around the world, not to the economic impact and devastation that could come should we really soil the sheets on this one. No. She is, the giveaway here is her use of the word problematic. That's a liberal dog whistle word where they just the judgingness of it, and it's inappropriate to use that word. Well, there are, you know, millions of words or hundreds of thousands. I don't know how many. There's a lot of words in the English language. People should be able to use whichever damn ones they want. If it's problematic for you, plug your ears. It's unclear how you can hear with your head shoved so far up your ass you could almost chew your own face. But hey, what are you gonna do? It's not a perfect world. Here is Karine Jean-Pierre on MSNBC. I would note that this went unchallenged and unrefuted and unremarked upon, really, by just about anybody on that network on this panel.
The xenophobia and the racism in outbreak is such a common thing. We've seen it in past health outbreaks that we've seen in this country's history. The problem is it's coming directly from the president of the United States, and it is incredibly dangerous. It is problematic, and it is scary, and I just really want to call that out, because you do have people in the Asian American community whose lives are at risk, and for the president to call it a Chinese virus or a foreign virus, that is just it's just so dangerous and not a good thing to do, obviously.
It's just not a good thing to do, obviously. This is going to cause racism. They really have the contempt for their fellow Americans. They really think that their fellow Americans are awful, evil people who are incredibly stupid. And it makes sense, really, when you get down to it, because these progressive activists on CNN and MSNBC spend all day with other progressive activists on CNN and MSNBC. If that was your frame of reference, you must think that everybody on the planet is just an awful moron, because that's what they're surrounded by all day long, all night long. This is who they are. This is what they marinate in. Now we smash cut to the White House daily briefing on the, by the coronavirus task force. I do not know who this reporter is. If I had the opportunity to ask the president a question, I'm not sure I would have asked this one. I would have asked something else, but that's just me. I'm not a liberal moron. So we'll play his audio now and listen to his question, the back and forth he has with the president. Imagine having an opportunity to talk to the president of the United States, and this is where you go. This is where you go with it. People need a freaking hobby.
China and others have criticized you for using the phrase Chinese virus. How do you feel about that? Are you going to continue using that phrase?
Well, China was putting out information which was false, that our military gave this to them. That was false. And rather than having an argument, I said, I have to call it where it came from. It did come from China. So I think it's a very accurate term. But no, I didn't appreciate the fact that China was saying that our military gave it to them. Our military did not give it to anybody.
Critics say use that phrase creates a stigma.
No, I don't think so. No, I think saying that our military gave it to them creates a stigma.
Now imagine working your whole career, building up to the point where you are now White House correspondent for whatever rag that it's, this guy works for. I don't recognize him. But you finally get there. Your parents are proud. Your siblings are jealous. Everybody you went to high school with is envious of how far you've gone. And, oh, wow, he must be a genius. And then the president calls on you and you ask a question steeped in Communist Chinese government propaganda. Imagine that. That's what this guy did. That's who the mainstream media has become. If it works against Trump, they'll ask it. Now, it's not all of them. Many of them are beginning to realize that now probably isn't the best time to try and damage the president and damage the country. But many of them still do try to damage him and damage the country. Again, I don't know who this jackass is, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was from CNN, because CNN, later on in the day, they had a report about how the UK is dealing with coronavirus. And listen to this snippet of this package. They play a clip of Boris Johnson, the prime minister, and then they cite faceless, nameless internet trolls who apparently, some, because this is how stories work. I can't tell you how many Time or Newsweek stories have been written based on 4 tweets from people you never heard of. Many accounts are anonymous. So the internet erupted over this, that, or the other thing. And it's like, no, 4 jackasses who may or may not be bots decided to complain about something. And you wrote a story about it, therefore, thereby amplifying it exponentially. Listen to, they compare Boris Johnson to a clip from Shrek. Now, this is supposed to be a serious news outlet doing a serious news story about how the UK is handling the coronavirus outbreak. And instead, they follow anonymous, faceless, nameless, nobody internet trolls. Because why? I don't know why. And then when you listen to the clip from Shrek that they play, it doesn't actually sound anything like what Boris Johnson said. The only reason to include it is because you wanted to take a swipe at Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson is, for the UK, a conservative. Listen to this.
Off. While at the same time, Prime Minister Boris Johnson made grave predictions about what's likely to come.
Many more families are going to lose loved ones before their time.
If, for any reason,
a message shared and mocked widely online for sounding a little too similar to Shrek's Lord Farquaad.
Some of you may die, but it's a sacrifice I am willing to make.
Can you imagine a circumstance under which that last part would be relevant whatsoever? shared widely and mocked for sounding like Shrek. And then here's a clip from Shrek that doesn't sound anything like it, has no similarity whatsoever. It's an arrogant leader saying that some of you are going to have to die to benefit me. That is not what Boris Johnson said, but that's how CNN spun it. That's what CNN saw. That's what CNN decided to report. For what reason? No good reason whatsoever, other than they are horrible, awful liberals. You can't put it aside for a second. Now, we have an example of somebody putting it aside, and that'll be the last clip we'll play before we talk to Brian Darling, but it is just nuts. There are some people, times of crisis expose people for who they are, and we tend to look fondly upon the good people who rise to the occasion. There are other people who shrink from an occasion, who show who they are and how gross they are. One such person is actress Vanessa Hudgens. I had to look up, actually, to find out how old this person was. I knew who she was, but I didn't know how old she was. She sounds like a 14-year-old who got stoned for the first time. I suspect she's stoned in this, but she's 31 years old. Now, I want you to keep that in mind, the fact that she is 31 years old, as you listen to a video she posted to Instagram for, I don't know why, she probably can't know why, other than the fact that, and no offense to rocks, that she is as dumb as a box of rocks.
Yeah, till July sounds like a bunch of bullshit. I'm sorry. But, like, it's a virus. I get it. Like, I respect it, but at the same time, like, even if everybody gets it, like, yeah, people are gonna die. It's just terrible, but, like, inevitable? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this right now.
The telltale sign is the stoner laugh at the end. What a piece of human excrement. What a garbage human being. Well, you know, I don't get it. This is proof that in Hollywood, you don't have to be even basic level intelligent. You can be a special kind of stupid and get by if you're good looking enough, because they'll have somebody on the set to tell you how to pronounce those really big words, like ones with two syllables. And maybe even three. Of course, if you're casting someone like Vanessa Hudgens in your movie, you're going to make sure that the script, at least her character, does not have three-syllable words, because the union time of trying to explain what those words mean to her and how to pronounce them is probably just far too high. Well, after a day, and I'm sure her publicist chewing her ass out, and her agent saying, I'm not going to represent you unless you do something to make this right, she eventually posted a very short apology, sort of. What she says in this clip is that her words that you just heard in their entirety were taken out of context. Again, I would ask the same thing I ask about all the James O'Keefe videos when the left says, these are taken out of context. In which context is teaching somebody how to import underage girls for your child's prostitution ring good? What context can you put those in where it's good? Listen to Vanessa Hudgens try to wiggle her way out of her own stupidity.
Hey guys, so yesterday I did an Instagram live and I realized today that some of my comments are being taken out of context. It's a crazy time. It's a crazy, crazy time. And I am at home and in lockdown, and that's what I hope you guys are doing too. In full quarantine and staying safe and sane. Yeah, I don't take this situation lightly by any means. I am home. So stay inside, y'all.
The little giggle at the end. She definitely doesn't sound high at this moment, so she's got that going for her. The one thing missing from her apology was an apology. Did you notice that? I noticed that some of the things, some of you are taking it out of context when I said, yeah, but people are going to die anyway. I mean, what's the big deal? If I want to go out to the clubs, I should be able to go to the club. Yeah, so what? Giggle, giggle, giggle. I was just taken out of context. This is I mean, I don't know. I don't want to see her career ruined, but I think her career was ruined by a lack of talent. She was a cute teenager when she started making her debut, and now I don't even know if she works anymore, but this is just the mentality of what happens out in Hollywood. This is how the left is. This is, I guarantee you, dollars to donuts, whatever amount of money you want to put up, that she is going to vote for whoever the Democrat is. And every time she's voted has been for the Democrat. But I really did have to look up, how old is she? And it's 31. She's 31 years old. And she stopped maturing when she was 13 years old. I want to play this clip from the Australian Prime Minister on hoarding, because I think it's an important message. And I would like to see more world leaders say this and speak this bluntly about it.
Stop hoarding. I can't be more blunt about it. Stop it. It's not sensible. It's not helpful. And I've got to say, it's been one of the most disappointing things I've seen in Australian behaviour in response to this crisis. That is not who we are as a people. It is not necessary. It is not something that people should be doing. What it does is it is distracting attention and efforts that need to be going into other measures, to be focusing on how we maintain supply chains into these shopping centres. There is no reason for people to be hoarding supplies in fear of a lockdown or anything like this. As I've said, we are putting in place scalable and sustainable measures. I'll read you specifically what the AHPPC has said to ensure that there is absolutely no confusion. The AHPPC advises against the bulk purchase of foods, medicines and other goods. We discourage the panic purchase of food and other supplies. I am seeking Australia's common sense cooperation with these very clear advisory positions. Stop doing it. It's ridiculous. It's un-Australian and it must stop. And I would ask people to do the right thing by each other in getting a handle on these sorts of practices.
A great and important message there from Scott Morrison, the Australian Prime Minister. I'd like to see President Trump talk about it. I'd like to see Boris Johnson. I'd like to see all world leaders talk about this. Look, we're going to get through this one way or another. Don't do stupid things now. You're going to have to pay off those bills sooner or later. You know, if they say that, you know, most people don't have $500 for an emergency, okay, then buying $2,000 worth of toilet paper and canned goods at a time when there is no shortage and no threat of a shortage is insane, because you're putting that on your credit card most likely. You're going to have to pay it off. Be rational. Be sane. Think. Just try thinking. Calm down. Lastly, before we get to the Brian Darling interview, I want to play a clip from Governor Andrew Cuomo about him saying nice things about Donald Trump. I'm not playing it because he's saying nice things about Donald Trump. I'm playing it because it's a Democrat saying nice things about a Republican. I'm playing it because the message that he conveys in it is wildly important and something that the rest of our media could learn a thing or two from. There'll be time to have all the fights in the world. Now is not that time. Now is the time to be calm and come together. We can fight and we can die. We can just put it aside for now. That's not an excuse to do stupid things on either side, but is a chance. I don't know. I heard this and I thought, yeah, this is a good message. So I want to kind of end on this.
I said to the president, who is a New Yorker, who I've known for many, many years, I put my hand out in partnership. I want to work together 100%. I need your help. I want your help. And New Yorkers will do everything they can to be good partners with the federal government. I think the president was 100% sincere in saying that he wanted to work together in partnership, in a spirit of cooperation. He has taken evidence that his team has been on it. I know a team when they're on it, and I know a team when they're not on it. His team is on it. They've been responsive late at night, early in the morning. And they've thus far been doing everything that they can do. And I want to say thank you. And I want to say that I appreciate it. And they will have nothing but cooperation and partnership from the state of New York.
So we're trying the new Skype thing, and I've switched to microphones, as you can tell, undoubtedly, as I figure out what these knobs and bells and whistles mean. Maybe it'll sound better, maybe it'll sound worse as I play with all of them, but we are joined by my buddy, Brian Darling, president of Liberty Government Affairs, the guy who's forgotten more about how the United States Senate functions than most people have ever learned in their lives. I thought, let's pick a brain, plus do some technical tests. So how's it going, Brian? Are you hunkered down in a bunker as well?
I am. I'm hunkered down in Bethesda, Maryland, not allowed to really do all that much.
That's just because your wife runs your life, right?
That's true. My wife is tougher than Governor Hogan.
Actually, since I've been telling the story of how I have been getting by with my family, I'm just curious, since, you know, I kind of want to test other people and see how they're surviving. What are you doing all day? You have three kids. They're older than mine are. One is about three, so that's close. But your two girls are old enough to talk back, to be annoyed, to do all of those things that not quite teenagers do. But there seems to be a bit of teenager coming in earlier and earlier in kids these days. You're all stuck in this house together. These girls have friends. They want to do things. They miss school. They're social kids. How is that going?
Not well. Not well at all. We're doing a lot of homeschooling because the schools have been shut down in Maryland. And for the last 2 days, we've been getting assignments from their school and trying to do as much as we can at home. So that chews up a couple hours every day. Of course, that slows down my work production, and it makes it hard for me to do any work at all. But, you know, you're stuck inside. It's kind of, I mean, I remember 9/11, how that was and how people were really freaked out and everything was shut down for a day or two. And this seems like it's a much longer version of 9/11. I mean, you have everything being shut down for a long, long period of time, it looks like. And, you know, the end isn't even anywhere near in sight, so it's going to be hard to adjust.
Well, the difference is after 9/11, you could go out. You could go to a restaurant. You could do anything. I mean, you can go out, but if you go out in Washington, D.C., in Maryland, in Virginia area, there's nothing to do. There's no, it's not that I would recommend going to a movie, but the movie theaters are shut down. They're shut down across the country. The restaurants are closed. There is nothing to do. All you can really do, the social event of the season, if you will, is a trip to the grocery store.
Yeah, but there are some similarities. I remember back in 9/11, I lived in Virginia at the time, and I remember I worked in Capitol Hill, and I drove out the night of the attacks from D.C., out of D.C. to Virginia, and driving, I was the only one on the whole highway. I drove right by the Pentagon. The Pentagon was still in flames and smoke coming out of it. It was a surreal experience. Nobody was allowed to drive into D.C. It was similar in the sense that everything was in lockdown, at least for that day. And the next couple days were very, you know, there's a lot of security all over the place. Many of the buildings were locked down. So it was, in the very short term, it was similar in the sense that Washington was kind of under lockdown. And now you've got the whole nation pretty much under lockdown for an extended period of time, with people just not knowing when it's going to end and not knowing how bad the situation is going to turn out.
As you talk to the people you talk with and the heads of the organizations that you deal with and everything going about your business from home, what sense are you getting about how bad this is going to be? I mean, you work in a sort of a unique industry. It's not manufacturing or anything like that, or the restaurant business, but you know people in those industries, you know people in all industries. And just what is the fears that you're hearing? Is it that this is really going to be worse than they were expecting? Or do you think that people have a sense that we could come out of this okay?
Well, I think people are really concerned we're going to have it worse than we expect. You know, you and I live within the beltway, as it were, in Washington, D.C. So in a sense, you know, we are in a recession-free zone because a lot of the people that are around us work in government, and they're not going to lose their jobs, and they're going to make the same amount of money no matter what, whether they go to work or not. But people who support this area, people who have small businesses, are really in trouble. I have a neighbor who owns a gym. His gym shut down. He has no idea how he's going to pay his rent next month. And there are people that work in politics. You know, right now, if you're a lobbyist, what are you going to do? You can't go to Capitol Hill. You're not allowed to actually go to meet with members of Congress. You can't go to fundraisers. You're not really doing much of anything. And I guess you can, you know, call some people on the phone. But, you know, in public relations firms, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to work on? Especially when you see a lot of people in Capitol Hill saying that they may basically pass a couple of bills and get out of Dodge for a while and basically stay out of Washington for a period of time and have their, you know, what usually is their August recess, maybe a little early. I mean, if they are out of town and just not doing any work after they pass these massive bailouts, there'll be nothing for a lot of the support people in Washington to do. You've got mandatory shutdowns of restaurants and big facilities. I mean, it's just devastating for the economy. We have no commerce. I mean, commerce has been shut down by the government. How do we recover from that? I don't think anybody knows.
Well, let's talk about how the people who are trying to figure out how to recover from that are moving to try to recover from that and get your sense of it. They're throwing around ungodly sums of money. No matter what the House, the Senate is going to vote on the House bill before they go home on recess. But there's going to be another bill. There's going to be at least one other bill, probably two other bills. And I think that's a low estimate. I think we're looking at as many bills as it takes, which sadly, a lot of times, if you look at the history of this country recovering from recessions and or depressions, the more government does to try and get out of it, the longer it lasts. Whereas if you just kind of let it run its natural course, it does recover. And this sounds heartless, and I don't mean it to sound heartless, but there's no way to sort of state the facts without sounding heartless. If restaurants go out of business, if your buddy's gym goes out of business, if there was a market for a gym in that space, somebody else will fill it. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how we recover. So the artificial propping up of businesses by government might be good for your buddy, but I'm not sure he can ever make up for what he's lost and therefore ever really fully recover his business, which may be viable in that location if he either declares bankruptcy and sort of reorganizes that way or somebody else steps in and starts over from scratch. It's this weird sort of situation where a restaurant will go out of business and a restaurant will take over that exact same space and same food and do well. And the government involvement is non-existent in that. That's the market taking place. When this is passed in a few weeks, there will be people who want to go to restaurants. So all the restaurants that folded, many people will restart their old restaurants and many people will say, I can start a restaurant now because the one down the street didn't make it. There's a good space. They've got all the equipment. I like the floor plan. I can throw my money into that and take a chance as the uniquely American entrepreneurial spirit will allow. But that's not going to be allowed to run its course, I don't think, at least not as of now, because Congress is under the, I don't want to say panicked, that's the wrong word, but definitely urgent need in politics that is unique to politics, and that is to do something.
Yeah.
And the something matters, what the something is matters much less than that you're doing something. And you can see that as evidenced by Democrats in the first bill that went through trying to sneak in funding for abortion. Like, well, we're doing something. Let's just try and cram in a whole bunch of things. If they're not taking it as seriously as it needs to be, I'm not saying there isn't a role for government or even that there isn't something government can do to ameliorate the problems we're going to face. But if it is seen as an opportunity rather than an opportunity to do what is needed, that's where we fall into a big hole and a lot of trouble. so when you just saw my daughter run behind you, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
thank God this is audio only. But when you look at what's worming its way through Congress right now and what is expected to come and the tone and the tenor of things, which side of that do you think we're going to fall on? It is an opportunity or an opportunity to do what is needed?
Well, the problem is Congress probably can't do what is needed. I mean, there's no way to help that guy who lives down the street from you who's got a gym. I mean, you give him a $1,000 check, which is under consideration now. What's that going to do? That's not going to solve his problem. If you have some tax provisions that allows him to file his taxes later, is that going to save his business? No. I mean, you look at all of the ideas on the table right now. They can help out in the margins, but they're not going to save anybody's business. But in the
long run, Brian, isn't it? The point here is the ship is sinking, okay? So we've got Dixie cups is all we've got to try and bail it out. We're not going to keep the ship afloat for now. So the objective is to keep the ship from sinking long enough till we can get as many people as possible on the lifeboats, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at it kind of that way, yeah, again, it's really bad to say that your buddy down the street is probably not going to do very well in the long run, but it's about more than your buddy down the street. So in the grand scheme of things, as long as many people as possible get on the lifeboats before the entire Titanic goes down, only to be risen again afterwards, that should be the goal. There, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, the problem is that the government's really bad at the lifeboats. They're very bad at what they do when they try and get involved in helping out private enterprise to not fail. And we saw that during TARP. We saw that during the bailouts and the banks, big banks were all called in by Hank Paulson. They were forced to take money. Many of them didn't want to take it. And they later said that they didn't use that money for liquidity. They used it for other things. They had the money and they used it for things that did not. A lot of them thought they didn't need the money. And secondarily, they didn't use it the way that the government wanted them to. And you look at the history of bailing out industries, and it tends not to work. And so we're staring at a big bailout of the airline industry. Well, maybe it will help infuse some cash and keep the airline industry doing a little bit better. But we know now that people aren't going to be flying for a long time. I mean, this is going to last for a long, long time. If you throw money at the problem, aren't you making it worse? I mean, aren't you propping up some industries that probably a couple of them, a handful of them, are not going to be liquid, they're not going to have any cash, they're not going to be able to keep going? I don't think anybody thinks the whole airline industry is going to collapse, but we know that a couple airlines aren't going to survive this, and it's just the nature of the beast. You know, we are in a crisis, an economic crisis, and there may be nothing the government can do to save it.
Can your libertarian instincts see the benefit to helping an industry like the airlines?
I think that if you were to bail them out, I don't think that's a good idea. I do think that there are some good ideas on the table. You can use tax policy. You can, you know, use some tax forgiveness. The idea of having a payroll tax holiday, I think, is a great idea because you're letting people keep more of their own money. So maybe there are some ways to not collect certain taxes from a lot of these industries that will let them keep a lot of their own money, keep them afloat, instead of the government collecting taxes and then doling it out and redistributing wealth in a way that is not going to be helpful to these industries. So, you know,
the objective for that, though, is that they need liquidity now. If you allow them to say you forgive taxes or whatever, that's not going to put money into their pockets now. It's sort of taking the individual $1,000 check argument and taking it on to the company level. But that would be the argument, is the not having to pay a bill by July 15th now that the filing deadline has been extended. By not having to pay by July 15th, you're not really, yeah, they're keeping more of their own money, but they kind of need a pile of it now.
Sure. I guess my big picture answer is there is a role for government in this situation. This is an extraordinary situation. It's almost like a war. You know, it's almost like one of those situations where government has to play some sort of a role. But I have zero confidence that the government will do the right thing. They'll screw it up and they're going to throw money in the wrong places. We're already seeing just insane policies coming out of the Fed that are basically an attempt to keep the stock market from collapsing, and it's not working. And, you know, you see the government do a lot of these things, and a lot of politicians, the only thing they care about is doing something and being able to say after this crisis is over is, hey, look, I tried. You know, I voted for that bill. I was supporting $1 trillion in aid to be thrown in 50 different places. And you know what? Didn't work. But I tried. So I was there for you. I tried. But my problem is that government's going to get it wrong. They already have started to get it wrong. They're already making really bad decisions. I mean, throwing a check at every American for $1,000, it's not going to solve anybody's problems. It's really bad policy.
Yeah, I agree generally, but all right, I think they're scrambling because I don't think they know what to do, to be perfectly honest with you. And I don't know that anybody knows what to do. Everybody's got their own opinion. Liberal economists are saying it should be a $2,000 check. And conservatives are saying no money whatsoever. Get rid of the taxes. Get rid of give a payroll tax holiday. And again, that's the payroll tax holiday, while fiscally probably more responsible, the problem with it is people don't really feel it. It's like you're making $50,000 a year, and suddenly your boss says, I'm going to pay you $51,000 a year.
Right.
And you're like, oh, great. It's great that I'm making more money. But at the end of the day, after taxes are taken out and after it's spread out over 52 weeks, it's like $14 in your pocket every 2 weeks. And you don't notice that, whereas there is kind of a shock to the system of $1,000 right now, particularly if it could be means tested, I suppose, because there are going to be people that are going to really be facing some hardships. And Bill Gates doesn't need a $1,000 check, but they're acting so quickly that they don't have time to put in the mechanisms to manage the means test, I don't think. But a waitress or a bartender who is, you know, they got nothing. What are you going to do? They're not going to have an income for a while unless they go get one of the new Amazon jobs. And so they need something. And there just isn't anything there. In a sense, for that person, for people like that, it's the least worst bad idea, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I would think that when you look at how much was collected in taxes, I think it was in 2018, the estimation was that personal income taxes alone collected about $1.7 trillion for the federal government. What if you just suspended, just didn't make people pay any personal income taxes, didn't withhold income taxes and let them keep that money for people who are working? I mean, you would really incentivize work. And obviously, a lot of people can't go to work because the government's not letting them go to work. I mean, obviously, these are problems that some of them are impossible to solve. Some of them we cannot solve. And maybe, you know, I think some people say, well, the government should cut a check and just throw it out there. Well, the problem is, it's probably not really going to help people that much. And in the end, can you imagine the debt we're going to have and the debt crisis we're going to have in about a year? I mean, the fact that we're throwing money, $1 trillion at this new program, the fact that there's going to be no government revenues. I mean, we are in a recession, maybe staring at a depression. There's going to be no money coming into the federal government because of the fact that there's nobody working. And so who's going to be cutting checks to the federal government for income taxes and all these other taxes? They're just not going to be, the government's not going to have any money. We may be staring at a $2 to $2.5 trillion debt for this fiscal year, which is just staggering.
No, that's absolutely true. Like I said earlier in the show, when all this is said and done, and we have to have a reckoning with China and their responsibility for this, part of that reckoning should be, you know, all that debt of ours that you hold, you're never getting a dime on it. Okay. you can try and sell it. You can try and dump it, but we're letting the world know this debt is garbage. So nobody wants to buy it. Okay. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to, you know, complain about it. Right? You can eat it over time. You can write it off your books any way you want. I don't care. But it's, you caused this, and your arrogance caused this. So there is going, even if it's like half of it or whatever, whatever our deficit is this year, there you go. You hold $10 trillion in debt. All right, well, we're going to take off $2.5 trillion of it, and we're never going to pay that. And you're just going to have to suck it up, buddy, because you did this. Something like that. Now isn't the time to do that. But there will be a time to do that where China deserves a reckoning for their mishandling of this.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody float that yet, but I would like to see somebody float that. I'm not sure how that would go over. But I would like to see somebody kind of float that, because I'm not really sure, aside from, oh, yeah, you're going to pay, I'm not sure what the counter argument from China is going to be on that.
Yeah, you just say, you know, I'm just not going to pay that. No, but you owe that money. Yeah, you know, we're just not going to pay it. Yeah, it is what it is. You guys get over it.
We're forgiving student loan debt and our own debt. You know, that's,
yes.
it just strikes me as a very precarious time. Is there, in all your observations of what's going on up there, is there anybody that seems to know what's going on, what they're doing? Or is it, like, I know you're a friend of Rand Paul and a fan of Rand Paul.
Yes.
But Rand Paul is very good at standing on the sidelines, holding his arms and saying, no. Which isn't particularly helpful in a lot of circumstances. You know, imagine Rand Paul while you're trying to push your car off the road because it stalled, and he's sitting there with his arms folded. He's like, no. But is there anybody out there aside from Rand Paul where you're thinking, okay, I don't agree with them, but at least they're taking this seriously and they have some outside of the box ideas?
Not really. I mean, I think in the House, you've got a couple members that are kind of similar to Rand Paul in that they're willing to vote no, like Chip Roy of Texas and Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky and Warren Davidson, another great member. You get a bunch of members in the House and not that many in the Senate. I think Mike Lee of Utah has done a great job. But bottom line, you know, it's good to at least have one. I mean, Rand Paul was the only vote against the first phase one coronavirus bill. I assume he's going to be one of the only votes against this bill that's pending now. And then phase three, which is a massive bailout, I'm sure he'll be one of a handful of members that'll vote no on that. And it's good to have at least one or two members, I don't care what party, to just say no when you have these massive bills moving, because you got to have somebody pushing against it and saying, hey, hold on a second. What's even in this bill? The bill that passed the House was such a mess and nobody had read it that they had to have a 50 plus page technical corrections to, I think it was 110 page bill. I mean, that's how much of a...
Explain for a second, Brian, what a technical corrections bill is, because people are hearing this and they don't know what it means.
What it's supposed to be is some you know, legislature or staffer sits down, writes up legislation, and oops, we made a mistake, but the bill passed. How do we fix it? Well, we're going to have to do a technical correction and fix that one little provision in the bill that we screwed up. But now what happens is Congress passes these bills and they say, oh, let's get another bite at the apple, call it a technical corrections bill, and add in all the stuff that we forgot to put in the past. So what they're going to deal with is not a technical corrections bill. It is adding stuff in that they didn't get in at the first bite of the apple. So, but theoretically, somebody makes a mistake in a piece of legislation, you do a technical correction to fix that mistake. That's not what
it can be as simple as we forgot a comma or something like that, and it changed the meaning of a sentence. And that's why the term technical correction is. But it's when they write these rushed pieces of legislation. I don't know. I hope nobody out there has ever actually read legislation, because it is torture. But it's nearly impossible to understand, because the United States code is so gigantic that you're changing words and phrases and removing a paragraph and inserting another paragraph, and you have to go to this monster in the U.S. code to find what they're actually talking about. And that does allow for a lot of errors to take place in the first place, and it does allow for sneaking in a whole bunch of stuff that nobody bothers to look at anymore. And Look, this isn't time for regular order in particular, though, Brian. You would at least admit that, you know, we kind of have something that is immediate. It's on us. It came on us very quickly. So you can't have the usual 6-month debate, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. This is something that is an emergency. They have to deal with it quickly, and you're going to have mistakes, but you're not going to have a mistake that necessitates a 50-page technical correction bill for a, you know, 110-page bill. It's just kind of ridiculous. But no, I think you'll probably see the same thing happen with the next bill. And the thing that's really scary is Secretary Mnuchin was saying that he wanted to get this bill passed next week. They're going to be writing a bill and nobody's going to see it. They're going to be voting on a trillion. Maybe it won't be a trillion. Maybe it'll be $750 billion or $850 billion, depending on who gets their way. And nobody's going to have really read the bill and understand everything that's in it when it passes. That's when you have problems. That's when Congress takes liberties, puts stuff in that has absolutely nothing to do with the current crisis, and you get a mess.
Yes, well, Congress is very good at making messes. Quinn has joined us now. She's got an earpiece in. Can you say hi to Brian? Say hi. Ask where baby Brian is. Well, suddenly, because we're chatting on video, she's very shy.
Yes.
All right. So going forward, you went to the grocery store yesterday and you found still a shortage of toilet paper. You still, just from your spidey sense that's tingling, how do you think the American people are going to cope with this thing in a week, you know, or in 2 weeks? Is it going to be Mad Max? Or if you look, because frankly, if you look at like Spain, or you look at what Italy is doing, and the people of Italy are sheltering in place, and they've got it much worse than we do. And hopefully we never get to that point. Their healthcare system is actually overrun and not handling it well. And they're making decisions based on a formula of how old somebody is and whether or not they're worth trying to save their life because they're so overwhelmed. Yet still we see, you know, balconies, people on balconies singing opera and musical things and light shows. And they're finding a way to get by the societal fabric, which is very delicate, even though it seems incredibly strong. It's very delicate, is holding in places like Italy and in Spain. Now, they live on top of each other in a lot of places, and that's where this is happening. But compared to the United States, how are we going to handle it better? Are we going to handle it worse? What does your spidey sense tell you?
It tells me that we're going to handle it probably pretty similarly. I mean, I know that you're from the north. Well, you're from the north, you know, the cold areas of the country. I'm from the northeast. And, you know, I think that every time there's a giant snowstorm, everybody panics, goes, gets all the water, you know, gets toilet paper, whatever they can get, just frozen pizzas, you name it. You go to the store, you get there late. You're like, damn, there's nothing left to buy. All the good stuff is gone. Now we're seeing this over a long period of time, and it's getting a little scary. I mean, are we going to have supply chains just completely disrupted where we go?
Well, so far the supply chain has held. It's a demand issue. They're making just as much toilet paper as they made last year. It's just as soon as it's on the shelves, people gobble it up.
Yeah.
And I think after this, and I've said this on the show before, after this, the toilet paper industry is going to see a downturn. They're going to see a big uptick right now. And they're going to see a downturn because a lot of people are not going to have to buy toilet paper for a year. They're set on that. It's irrational. You can't eat toilet paper. And if you don't have food, you're not going to need toilet paper. But that I imagine, because there is a lot of pressure out there and politicians are slowly getting on the same page and finally putting aside a lot of the stupid partisan bickering, at least partially, that says don't hoard the food. The supply chains are going on. It would be different if this were a virus that if you got it, you didn't know you got it, and you got 5 minutes till you're dead and you just collapse. You know, it would be different in that sense. That would cause the panic, and that should cause a panic. This isn't like that. About 90%, you know, a super high percentage of people do just fine with this if they get it. It's about protecting vulnerable people, the old and the people with pre-existing health conditions. So in that sense, it's different, but we don't know how, and this isn't the fault of the president. This isn't fault of the Democratic media, although they have certainly, they didn't create this, but they fed it. It is the sense of that it is going to be like The Walking Dead, that it is going to be a complete societal collapse. And I don't know. Maybe it's unjustified. I have more faith in humanity than that, that we're not going, because the food is coming. If the food weren't coming, I could see it. But the food is coming, you know? And look, if you're hungry and starving, I wouldn't put anything past anybody. But we're not. We are flush with food as we've always been. Farmers are still planting. It's planting season. The food is still getting put out there. We have means to preserve food forever in cans and frozen and things like that. It just doesn't seem like the perspective that it should be put in is being put in. Because you say, you talk in these absolutist terms, the economy is going to be devastated. Yes, the economy is going to be devastated, but the economy has been devastated before and come back. I don't know what the right combination of words are, and I wish that I did to sort of cause somebody to calm down, the collective, the royal we. Because I'll tell you, depending on what I'm watching, I'm impacted. I know the games. I know the manipulation games. I wrote a book about the manipulation games that are used by the left in particular to scare people. And I can listen to one show and think, oh, thank God, we're doing all right. And then I watch another show and it's like, holy shit, I got to go out and buy guns and ammo. Right. And and I know the game, and I still fall for it. So people who don't know the game, that's what kind of worries me.
Well, I think what worries everybody is they just don't know how long is this going to last. I mean, the fact that we are completely disrupted from our watching of sports, the fact that we can't just go and, go work out at the gym, go catch a movie, do all the things that we do regularly because the government's kind of shut it all down. And the major sports industries have kind of just said, hey, look, we're going to just shut it down because we just don't know how this is going to play out. We're terrified. I think that the problem is with most people is that they're just scared because they don't know what's going to happen in the future. We've seen just wild swings in Wall Street because people just can't foresee how this is all going to play out over the long term. Yet I turn on the TV today and I see a bunch of CNN commentators bitching and moaning because people in San Francisco were actually out in the sun, enjoying the day, walking around, boyfriends, girlfriends, holding hands, like, oh, they're touching each other. It's terrible. I think we have a lot of overreaction in some quarters, but I think the bigger picture problem is that people just don't know how this is going to end and how bad it's going to be.
Well, it's the thing to remember always is it is going to end, though. And, no matter how bad it gets, it'll get better. That's the beauty of the human spirit, and it's really the American spirit, as I think that we'll come out of this better off in the long run for this, because it won't be able to hit us again. And hopefully the actions that our government is taking now can mitigate it. South Korea, they're starting up their professional basketball teams again. Yeah. So they're already confident in that. So and it hasn't been that long. They took different measures than us, but there are lessons to be learned from there. And I hope that we learn them and we can get past it. And then we can get back our professional sports. I'm not a big professional sports fan, but I don't mind it being on the TV and I'll watch a game if it's on. I just don't seek it out. You, on the other hand, Brian, as we wrap it up, are a rabid Bostonian, a New England fan, and it's a dark, dark day for New England. Tom Brady is expected to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I can see by the look on your face, or you're maybe passing a stone.
I'm going to start crying if you keep talking about it. I would ask you to please stop talking about it.
You're not concerned about the panic, the lack of toilet paper in a house of five people, anything like that. It's that Tom Brady is moving to sunny Florida.
Yeah, it was the most devastating news I got today was when I woke up and saw Tom Brady on Instagram thanking Patriots fans because he's gone. It was heartbreaking. And it really...
You emailed me and our friends immediately. And I was like, I figured it's greatest of all time.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No, it's over. It had to end at some point. It's finally over. And I may even at some point, just so I feel better about myself, go out and buy a Tom Brady Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey just so I can continue to root for him.
Do you think he should have kept playing or do you think he should have hung it up?
Nah, definitely. I mean, he could have gone to the Super Bowl last year with a couple, you know, if a couple things went a little bit differently, if the Patriots actually had a couple wide receivers for him. So there's that.
The loss was devastating to him, but he'll have to comfort himself with his billions of dollars and his wife, Gisele Bündchen. I think he'll be okay, no matter what. All right. Brian Darling, Liberty Government Affairs, in mourning, not over the economy, but over the Patriots. Well, what are the Patriots going to do? They got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, who did go to the Super Bowl.
They're going to be terrible.
You got to be used to that, though.
The Golden State Warriors, they're big time, and they got rid of a bunch of their players, and they went down the toilet and tried to, you know, secure that number one pick. Maybe that's what the Patriots are going to do.
There's always a silver lining, Brian. Thanks for talking to us, and thanks to you guys for listening and tuning in and telling a friend and all that stuff. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. Stay inside, play a game or something. Learn to play solitaire, even if you're alone. Or video chat with people. You can do all sorts of things. Don't do anything wrong. We'll be back here tomorrow. Have a good one.